I look at your faces, and some of you look quite tired. But I'm so glad that you are staying behind to worship the Lord for evening service. And usually, we have kind of fixed faces for evening services, so I think you should not go for holidays. We do not want to lose you. Okay. Based on Hebrews chapter 11, verse 22, we are going to study about Joseph's faith. Last week, we studied about Jacob the supplanter. Out of curiosity, I decided to check the number of occurrences of some biblical names. How many times those individuals' names are mentioned in the scriptures? And obviously, I have not been able to check every one of those names in the scriptures, but I decided to check some of those famous names. And I found that David tops on the list by its 1,085 occurrences in 930 verses in the whole Bible. Moses followed by 829 occurrences in 774 verses. Solomon occurs 281 times in 253 verses. Then I decided to check the names from the patriarchs. And Abraham occurs 231 times in 216 verses. And Isaac is 128 times in 119 verses. And Jacob occurs 358 occurrences times in 332 verses. So in fact, amongst those three patriarchs, we can see that Jacob's name occurs more than anyone else. In fact, it was a little bit of a surprise because I thought that Abraham's name might be the first and Jacob followed him. But it was against my expectation. When we come to the name Joseph, we find 228 occurrences in 214 verses. It shows us that not only in the book of Genesis, but also in the rest of the Bible, Joseph's name is quite important, and the name was dealt with quite frequently. It has only three occurrences less than Abraham's name. It is also true to say that his name is often related to the 12 tribes of Israel, rather than any particular event beside the book of Genesis. Probably, if I can think of all those individuals in the Bible, Joseph is one of the most favorite people in the scriptures. And that's why I think there are a lot of Josephs out there sitting in the church pews today. Do we have Joseph in our church? No. Okay, that's all right. In fact, he's one of the most favorite sons in the Bible. If we look at him as a person objectively, we cannot but have respect for him. In fact, he was a good man. He was a very faithful worker. He was a spiritual person, and he had a very successful career and clean life. Who could not like him except his 10 brothers? He's one of the most adorable people in the scriptures. It is a quite amusing thought that such a person could be so much hated by his own brothers, even to the point that they pondered on a possibility to kill him. That much hatred existed in the hearts of his own brothers. Thus all men do not show any respect for you, don't be discouraged. Here is an adorable person, one of the most favorite sons in the Bible, who was hated by his own brothers, 10 brothers. Though people may not know much about the scriptures, most of them must have heard and known about Joseph. His life story is, in fact, a story of Israel's history. His life story tells us how the children of Israel went to Egypt and how God preserved his people from being perished. His life story is also a story about God's sustaining grace, and it reminds us that God does not forget His own. His life story also tells us that God is in control of all things, regardless of circumstances. And in fact, His story, life story, also tells us that truly all things are working for good for those people who love Him. It is also a story that speaks to us about God's divine purposes and plans, not known to us, but behind the scenes, behind the events we may experience. His life story tells us that we must wait until the last moment if we really desire to see why God does certain things in our lives that we just cannot and do not comprehend. So by looking at the beginning, do not judge God until you see the ending part of your beautiful life story. Joseph was a son of Jacob by Rachel, his beloved wife. His name was Jehovah Edi. It's a beautiful name. Today is Mother's Day, so let me just briefly talk about Rachel and her family. Rachel was loved by her husband, Jacob. However, because her father Laban's tricks, her sister Leah was given to Jacob first, and she became the second wife. Despite this kind of trick and somehow some problems, in fact, Rachel was loved by Jacob very much dearly. Such a story is obviously not applicable to most societies today, but it was the case to most of our ancestors. She desired to have a child, but she could not. The reason is not known to us why she was not able to be conceived, but the reason was known only to God. The scripture tells us that finally the Lord opened her womb, which is an indication that it was the Lord who did not open her womb to give her a child. She opened her womb and she had finally a baby. And this precious baby was Joseph. When she got a baby, she named him as Joseph because she was hoping that the Lord was going to add more babies, more children to her family through her. However, we all know that while her family was traveling from Bethel, Rachel had a labor on the way and gave birth a child, which was Benjamin, and she died. Thus, Joseph lost his mother when he was very young. It is a real life's irony. It is a real irony that God heard her prayer by adding one more child to her, but took her life away from her beloved ones. So as Rachel prayed to God, God added one more child, as the name Joseph was supposed to be meant. However, the Lord somehow took her away from Benjamin. While all other brethren had their mom, Joseph and Benjamin did not have one. By this time, I cannot but have a pity on them. Well, it is really possible that Benjamin did not fully comprehend what it meant to have a mom, mommy. But Joseph knew his mother, and probably he had a beautiful memories about his own mother and how sweet time he spent with her, with his mother. We can imagine how adorable son he was to his mother's eyes, because Rachel was waiting for that baby, and the baby was born, and it was Joseph. Jacob also must have been very tender toward Benjamin. When he had to send his sons to Egypt for food, he did not send Benjamin, but he kept him to be with him. During their first visit to Egypt, Joseph was not known to his brethren yet. Joseph demanded them to bring their youngest brother, Benjamin, with them next time. However, Jacob refused to send him, and he refused and refused until he and his family could not survive anymore without buying more food from Egypt. Listen to Jacob's words in Genesis chapter 42, verse 38. He said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother, which is Joseph, is dead, and he's left alone. If mischief befall him, Benjamin, by the way in the which he go, then shall he bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave." That much he was attached to Benjamin. Probably Joseph had a very soft spot in his heart toward his younger son, younger brother Benjamin, a poor boy who was never able to suck his mother's breast. When Joseph was reunited with his brethren again in Genesis chapter 42, he did not show much emotion, at least in his appearance. However, during their second visit in Genesis chapter 43, the story was different. All of his brethren came to see him, and Joseph asked them about their father. Then Genesis chapter 43, verse 29 says this, "And he," Joseph, "lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin." The Holy Spirit inspired Moses to write these words, "his mother's son." And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your younger brother of whom he spake unto me?" And he said, "God be gracious unto thee, my son." Can you see the fullness of the emotion that Jacob had? We find his weeping heart in this verse. He saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son. Then verse 30 in Genesis chapter 43 says, "And Joseph made haste, for his bowels did yearn upon his brother, and he sought where to weep, and he entered into his chamber and wept there." You know, I mean, while I was reading this portion of the scriptures, actually I was weeping. It's just such a moving part of Joseph's and Benjamin's life story. Joseph was a tender man with lots of afflictions in his personal life. But there was a soft spot for his younger brother, Benjamin. In a way, faith in God was a lifeline to him that gave him hope for life and future in times of troubles and suffering. So I think it will be a very meaningful study as we are going to study about his life and his faith. First of all, let us study about Joseph's life by faith. There must be lots of reasons why Joseph is one of the most popular and most favorite figures in the Bible. In fact, he was also his father's favorite, by the way. People may like him because his life story seems to be very triumphant, even though beginning was not so happy, but at the end of the story, there is a happy ending. He was a slave, but became a powerful man in the superpower country. Maybe it is his big heart that even forgave his unloving brothers who betrayed him, who sold him, who wanted to kill him. People may like him because they have found hope of life from his life story. He was in a dungeon, he was in a prison, he was in trials, he was falsely accused. But he rose up above everything. What a triumphant, wonderful, beautiful story. How many of us have been discouraged, encouraged in fact, by the providence of God behind Joseph's life? When we are going through certain issues, we think about Joseph. Whatever reasons they may have for their affection toward Joseph, one thing is for sure. Joseph's life was not easy. His life was really tough, rough, and in fact, undesirable. I do not want to follow the path of his life. It was full of suffering and undesirable events after events. The reason we like him is probably because of his beautiful ending. However, his beginning was full of sorrows and sadness. Personally, I believe that he could not live well if he was not a man of faith. Faith is, after all, the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen, as the first verse of the book of Hebrews chapter 11 says. So let me see his life. First of all, he was a target of envy. Acts chapter 7 verse 9 says, "And the patriarchs moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him." So here, Luke, when he was writing the book of Acts, he said the reason that Joseph's brothers decided to kill him or sell him was because they envied. His 10 brothers did not like him, and 10 brothers envied him. The reason for their envy should be a frustration, in fact, to all of us, if we are to understand the whole matter. There were basically two fundamental reasons for their envies. Number one reason was their father's love for Joseph, and second reason was God's election. There were basically two reasons for their envies, something like that. Both reasons are something, in fact, that Joseph could not help. It was his father Jacob's choice to love Joseph more than other sons. Genesis chapter 37 verses 3 and 4 say this. "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him." If this favoritism is a sin, then it has to be Jacob's sin, not Joseph's. But it is, after all, Joseph who has to bear the consequences of this unequal love of his fathers. Joseph dreamed a dream about himself, being exalted above his brothers as well as his parents. Lots of people today have, I think, misunderstood about Joseph's dream. And they are saying Joseph was a man of dreams. They say that we shall not prosper if we do not have dreams just like Joseph's. They emphasize on the importance of big dreams in order to repeat Joseph's success story in their lives. Lots of messages and seminars are purposed to inspire people to have big dreams. However, I must emphatically say that it was not Joseph who invented, even who desired these dreams or to dream big dreams. It was God who gave him those dreams. It was not his dream. Actually, it was God's dream. And also, we must know that Joseph's dreams were not visions, as some people try to explain. Be a visionary person just like Joseph. No, that was not the case. Joseph did not make up his own vision. But this dream was given to him. A dream. In this context, when people say that we must be visionary people, vision is a formation of a mental image of something that is not perceived as real and is not present to the senses. Thus, if we want to bring a revival to our church, people say that we must have a vision, as if clouds of people are coming into our church. So you have to have that vision. Then you have to incubate that vision, then your dream comes to be true. Some people say that if you want to be rich, then you need to have a vision to have lots of money by drawing a mental picture and incubate that vision in your mind. Then you will be rich. There are preachers actually who are teaching that way. However, all of these challenges, lectures, and messages are false and wrong. Yes, Joseph was a man of dreams. In fact, his brothers thought so in Genesis chapter 37, verse 19, in which they said one to another, "Behold, this dreamer cometh." But what they and many other people have not understood was that it was God who let him have those dreams. The dreams he had show that he was going to be honored someday, and it was God's choice. It was God's election. In a sense, the reason that he suffered was because God chose him to be an instrument to fulfill God's divine providence in order to deliver the children of Abraham's eventually from famine and so on. Of course, if we add one more to the list of the reasons for his brother's envy, it was Joseph's childish but innocent honesty. Sometimes he observed what his brothers were doing and he said everything about his brothers to his father. He was telling his brother, father about his brothers. And at the same time, he was telling about his dreams to his brothers. Having heard Joseph's dream stories, Genesis chapter 37 verse 11 says, and his brethren envied him, but his father observed the same. So he was a target of envy. But in fact, all those reasons are beyond his capability to handle, in fact. He didn't produce the reasons for envy. Second, he was a slave sold by his own brothers. Eight of Joseph's brothers wanted to kill him, and Reuben was not with them at the moment, and Judah wanted to spare his life from his brother's hands. Thus, he made a bold suggestion in Genesis chapter 37, verse 26. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? They agreed, and Genesis 37, verses 28 and 29 say, then there passed by Midianite merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. And Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. Well, if we draw a picture out of this story, it is like a panorama of a picture after picture. Think about it. They wanted to kill him, and there was an intervention of Judah. And Reuben, who wanted to spare Joseph, was not there. The Midianite merchantmen happened to pass by them. We may say that Joseph did not have to be sold if Reuben was there with them. We may say if the merchants did not pass by them at that moment, they did not have to sell him to the merchants. There may be lots of scenarios and there may be a lot of ifs. Why God did not intervene at that time? Why this thing happened? Why that thing happened? And we can think of a lot of stories after stories as scenarios. However, this remarkable injustice against Joseph. Injustice against Joseph was the way that God had provided not only for Joseph, but also his brethren and their families for their safety and preservation for the next 400 years. 400 years. We cannot fathom the wisdom of God in his ways. Being a slave must be a real hard experience to Joseph. Probably we are not able to describe his feelings and emotional reactions and to the developments of all these events he was a part of. He was only a slave. Slave is a person bound in servitude as the property of a person or household. He was not a free man anymore. At the same time, one of the definitions of slave is that he's a person who works extremely hard. That was Joseph's life. He never experienced such a hard life before. He was staying with his father while his brothers were working hard. Hard work was not a part of his life. Hard work was not a part of his experience as a child at all. In fact, hard work was for his brethren. He was favored by his father and wore especially colorful clothes. Now hard work became a part, if not the whole of his life. He lost his freedom because he became a slave. He was in dire condition of life. Third, he suffered injustice. Oh, if you want to talk about injustice, if you want to say life is not fair, ask Joseph. His life was full of injustice. If we begin to talk about injustice Joseph had to suffer with, we may list lots of things, in fact. As we have discussed already, he became an object of hatred of his own brethren, which was injustice. He was sold by his brethren without consenting to it, which was injustice. He was sold to Potiphar and served him and his household. Potiphar's wife was indecent and tried to tempt him, though he retained his integrity and refused her, he received the punishment, not reward from his master, which was injustice. Especially Joseph spoke to Potiphar's wife in Genesis chapter 39, verse 9. The second part of verse 9 says that he could not commit such a great wickedness and sin against God. That's what he said. He was maintaining his integrity. He was maintaining his innocence in this event. He was keeping his faith before God. God was the reason. God was the very reason that he did not want to be tempted. He did not want to commit any sin. The Lord's name was honored here, but there was no God's intervention in this event. And he was taken into a prison. What a divine injustice. He was punished for his righteousness. It is another sign of injustice. He met the king's butler and the king's baker. They dreamed dreams which showed their destinies. Joseph was able to interpret both dreams accurately, and the butler was released from the prison and baker was hanged. Having interpreted the butler's dream, Joseph made a very serious but heart-moving request to him in Genesis chapter 40, verse 14. He said this, "But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness. I pray thee unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house." He did not ask the butler for any sort of promotion and so on, but he said, you know, basically, I have been in prison, but you know, the reason that I'm in the prison is just unreasonable reason. Therefore, please speak to Pharaoh and let me be released from this prison. Was there a huge request? Well, probably we cannot say there was a huge request. Only thing that he asked him to do for him was to remember him. However, verse 23 in Genesis chapter 40 says, "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forget him." He was forgotten, which seemed to be injustice. There is no worse injustice than that a man like Joseph has to be forgotten in prison, totally forgotten. I wonder whether we can learn a lesson from this sad story of Joseph's life. It appears to be very strange that the Lord had put Joseph in such remarkable suffering and pain. In the eyes of man, there is no hope for Joseph. If we call his life a misfortune, he was a very unfortunate person. If we call it unlucky, then he was, I think, very, very unlucky person. However, if we look at the hind story of every single event and injustice in Joseph's life, we are able to see that everything was only a harsh reality in his life. However, we also need to remember that God deals with... It's kind of interesting. God always deals with his extraordinary people in extraordinary manners. When deliverance came to him and later to his brethren from the famine in Israel to the abundance in Egypt, there was no one who could claim for any credit. Everyone had to say that it was God who delivered him. Besides, there is a very important lesson that we all of us must learn. When God does bring his works into our lives, only God is able to interpret them. Sometimes something happens to us, and this is something that I really want to have, but somehow there was injustice served, and somehow out of my hands, things are going away, and I'm crying, "God, why? Why me?" Well, when God brings his works into our lives, it is God. Only God is able to interpret them. Therefore, do not rush to misjudge him over certain things. It is only God who can interpret it. If Joseph had lost the sight of faith in every precarious corner in his life and doubted and questioned about God and his faithfulness, toward these people. He could have been mad. He could have been crazy. He could have been in despair. He could have been gone away from the path of faith. God, how can you do this? He could have asked the Lord the very question which is very popular in these days. Where was God when I suffered? You know, that is a very kind of a very popular question these days. Where was God when I suffered? However, Joseph committed himself to God and worshipped him in faith. I would like to encourage each and every one of us, each and every one of you, to look beyond the horizon, though at times you and I, we may be in despair. While we do not see the movement of God behind the scenes of life, God sees us through all. As a foreigner, slave, and prisoner, there was no possible way for him to be exalted to the highest office in the land of Egypt. However, God made it possible. Pharaoh's servants were in prison and dreamed that required Joseph's interpretation. By letting them see the doubtful, doubled fulfillments of his interpretations, he was able to get credibility of his work. Pharaoh was in trouble by a dream, and there was no one who was able to interpret his dream. It just happened that the butler remembered Joseph from his days in the prison. He had forgotten Joseph for 2 years, but he happened to remember him in time. The timing was just right. God prepares a man for such a time. If we study his life from another angle, we may say that God's divine preparations of provisions for Joseph. God gave him dreams to hold on to. God moved Judah to protect him from the hands of his brethren. God sent Ishmaelites passing by Joseph and his brethren who bought him from the brothers' hands. They became Joseph's deliverer, but unaware of the meaning of their deliverance from Joseph's brother's hands. God sent him to Potiphar's wife, and there was a woman like Potiphar's wife. Probably that's why he was sent there. God sent him to the prison with two of Pharaoh's servants. Each and every corner, each and every event, there was God. And God prepared this man for a grandeur work of the deliverance of the children of Israel and of the Egyptians from the upcoming famine. We sometimes idealize the nature of Christian life and faith. So instead of trusting in him, we bring our ideas to God and raise questions. Why did God allow Reuben to leave his brethren for a while? As a result, Joseph was sold. Why did not God punish his brethren against the evil plan to kill him? Then he could have prevented all those things from happening. Why did God permit Joseph to be sent to prison, which was really injustice? Let us look at our life straightforward, you know. Friends, life is life. Our life is full of events and history, and you and I will not be able to escape from the progresses or digresses in life. Life on earth is not ideal. It should only remind us that this world is not eternal, and we must constantly look up. In the meanwhile, in fact, this story of Joseph's life, or difficulties and challenges and trials, in fact, teach us that in every moment we ought to cast our burdens upon God, and we keep trusting in him. Secondly, let me talk about Joseph's prophecy by faith. Hebrews 11:22 says, "By faith Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave a commandment concerning his bones." According to this verse, Joseph did what he did, such as making a prophecy concerning the children of Israel by faith. We know and understand that the return of the children of Israel back to the promised land was a very important part of God's redemptive plan for His people. Through the event of returning to the promised land, we find stories such as Passover, or 10 plagues upon the land of Egypt, the crossing of the Red Sea, manna, and so many miraculous stories and events during the wilderness journey. Especially the Passover before they left the land of Egypt was important for God's redemption. In fact, the prophecy of the return of the children of Israel was not an ordinary prediction or prophecy. It was an extraordinary prophecy and event. God works in an extraordinary manner with those for whom He has great purposes. That's why Joseph had to go through so many challenging situations. The reason that Joseph was able to prophesy such a remarkable prophecy was because probably the Lord enabled him to know of such mystery of His work, but at the same time, more practically, Joseph had learned lessons about the ways God worked for His own people in his own personal life experiences. He knew what it meant to live by faith and not by sight. So by faith, he was making the prophecy that his children and their descendants eventually would leave the land of Egypt and they would return to the promised land. When Joseph uttered the prophecy concerning the return of the children of Israel to the promised land, in fact, there was no whatsoever physical evidence of such event. In fact, we all know that the children of Israel had to spend at least 400 years in Egypt before the event of Exodus. Without faith, Joseph could not possibly make such a bold prediction and take my bones together with you. So let my bones will be removed from this land and my bones will be buried in the promised land. I'm sure that there was a spirit of prophecy given to him at the time. But the writer of the book Hebrews says it is not just the prophetic spirit that God has given to him. But in fact, the writer of the book of Hebrews says he did it all by faith. There is an interesting lesson we may need to learn. Joseph's personal life was a series of afflictions and sufferings until he was reunited to his family. In all those years, he lived by faith. And probably he must have learned how to live by faith and how to trust in God patiently. His personal afflictions taught him to depend on God fully and completely by faith, which led him to be patient. Such experiences must have helped him to trust in God even more. By the time when he was about to die, he saw God's unmistakable hands in his own personal life. And he also saw God's leading, guiding, and sustaining hands in his life and his children's lives. Thus he believed in God who was able to bring his people back to the promised land given to Abraham. He believed in God who had begun a good work in them. And really it is not different from what Paul had to say in Philippians chapter 1 verse 6, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. His faith even to prophesy about the return of his own people to the promised land did not get a sudden rise out of blue. His faith was increased over the years through hardships and sufferings. When Jacob died, Joseph's brothers were afraid of Joseph's possible retaliation against their betrayer before. It is always the case that sinners will bring afflictions upon themselves by their own self-condemnations and guilt. They sent a messenger to Joseph and pleaded for their lives. Genesis chapter 50 verses 16 and 17 say this. And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, Thy father did command before he died, saying, So shall ye say unto Joseph, Forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin. For they did unto thee evil, and now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. They used the name of their father in order to beg for mercy, in order to plead with Joseph for his kindness toward him. And Joseph's response was clearly shown in his tears. They even came to Joseph and bowed before him. Now look at Joseph's words in Genesis 50 verses 19 to 21. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, he thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. It was not because Joseph was an extraordinary person per se, but it was because Joseph saw God in every part of his life, even in his tears and tearful moments. He saw God. His thought was not on vindication or vengeance. He saw everything through the eyes of faith and nothing less. His primary concern was not himself, but the nation of God or the people of God. Joseph says in Genesis chapter 50 verse 20, in the second half of the verse says, God meant it unto good to save much people alive. What Joseph cared about was the kingdom of God. There was no shred of hint that his people might be able to return to the promised land. He did not have any clue what sort of life his children and their children would have in Egypt. He did not have any idea whether Pharaoh after him would let them go. His prophecy for his people to return to Palestine was made all by faith. Faith alone. Lastly, Joseph commended his children by faith. Again, Hebrews 11:22 says, by faith Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave a commandment concerning his bones. There was one thing in Joseph's mind concerning himself and his people. That is something like this. He knew that he and his people did not belong to Egypt. That's something that he knew. That's why he was able to say about the return of his own people to the promised land. Right from the beginning, even though he was in a very high position, and he was in a position from which he was able to exercise his power all over the land, the most strong and powerful country in their region at the time, superpower, he knew that Egypt was not his country. Thus he was concerned about his bones. That's an amazing thing even to think about. He commended his brethren in Genesis chapter 50, verses 24 to 25. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I die. And God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land unto the land which he sware to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from hence. This command was based, and this command was grounded on the promises of God given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And now Joseph believed in God's promises. Thus he commanded his own people to take his bones to the promised land, whenever it would happen, the return of the children of Israel to the promised land. The faith Joseph had in the promises of God should not be ignored. If we take a moment to consider his life just briefly, we should be able to see the marks of his faith. Genesis 42 verse 21 talks about Joseph when he was sold to the Midianites. And in fact, this particular story comes while his brethren were arguing amongst themselves before Joseph about the cause of the calamity falling upon them. And so Genesis 42 verse 21 says, "And they said one to another, 'We are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us.'" In the dungeon, how much he cried for mercy. How much cried he prayed to God for deliverance. How much he was weeping for compassion in the hearts of his own brethren. "God, please rescue me from this dungeon." How much he pleaded to his brothers not to sell him, at least as a slave, in the Egyptian prison. How much did he cry to the Lord for help? How much did he ask the Lord to vindicate his innocence? He did not commit a crime. He did not commit an offense. He had a dirty accusation as if he was an evil man who betrayed his master's trust and attempted a rape on his master's wife. We only conjecture. His name was tarnished. He lost his reputation as an adulterous man. He was falsely accused and falsely charged against a sin he had never, never committed. But God let him prevail all of those things and enabled him to grow as a man of faith. When he died, there was no regret. There is no sorrow. There is no sorrow for self-pity sort of thing. You know, out of my precious life, how many years I spent as a slave, how many years I was forgotten, why I had to be betrayed my own brothers, and why I had to live as a slave, and so on, blah, blah, you know. There must be a lot of complaints and so on. But he never mentioned anything, any one of those things. But when he died, he boldly told his brethren, by faith, to take his bones out to the promised land when they are going to leave the country. His last words mean really a lot, because that particular passage is actually talking about Exodus, which was going to take place 400 years later. He commanded it by faith. Joseph was a man of God. We praise the Lord for him. However, often we forget, if not neglect, an important truth found in every path of Joseph's spiritual journey. The truth is that God was with him. The reason that he lived a life by faith was because God was with him, and he was convinced that God was with him. There is no story in those chapters that God appeared to him in the prison. God appeared to him while he was serving as a slave. There is no hint that God intervened in all those falsely accused situations to be able to find some sort of extra favor from the accusers or from judges or from other people. Well, his life condition was really dire and very bad. However, he believed and he was convinced that God was with him, and God proved himself to be faithful to him. That's what I desire, and you are to desire. We are to be convinced by the presence of God in our lives, and we just live by faith. We live by faith. Let us look to the Lord in prayer.